From LPM,
Louisville Public Media.
Support for LPM podcasts comes from the Eye Care Institute and Butchertown Clinical Trials, where they strive for diversity, equity, and inclusion within their staff, patients, and clinical trial participants. To learn more, visit butchertown.clinic.
The Artistic Heart Podcast is produced by Anna Mead and me, Jack Wallen. It's distributed by Louisville Public Media. Our theme song was written and performed by Craig Waits. To suggest a topic or ask questions, feel free to reach us on Twitter at either JL Wallen or RUAnna3.
Welcome to the Artistic Heart Podcast. My name is Anna Mead, and I'm here with
Jack Wallen.
And today we are going to be talking about the idea that beauty is everywhere, which seems a little contrary to what you might have heard on the news. It hasn't felt that way for a few years, has it, Jack?
Well, you're kind of talking to the wrong person with that, because I was built for working from home.
There's a beauty in that, right?
Yeah, there really is. Actually, I was talking to somebody today about this very thing, about how it's for me, for people like me, and this other gentleman who I was talking to is another writer. We agreed that this new normal is very okay with us,
because for a certain type of work and a certain type of personality, I think it's done huge service.
Yeah, and at the same time, and I know that I've seen it more and more lately, and this will relate directly to what we're going to talk about. I've seen so many artists posting on social media that they are wrecked right now, that they just don't know how they're going to keep going. Mm-hmm. And I was having a discussion with, actually, she was a woman that I went to graduate school with. And she and I were talking about how hard it is to not be acting. And I told her that I said, I was very lucky that I found writing, because writing fills that space. And I said, however, it doesn't quite fill it completely.
It's not the same.
It's not the same, because it's a very solo endeavor. And it's, and there's nothing like the back and forth and the connections you make on stage. And I'm not necessarily talking about the connections you make with actors. I'm talking about the connections you make with characters. And
the play.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that there is such a beauty in that. And it's a beauty. It's a rarefied beauty.
Well, and we didn't really appreciate it till we lost it, did we?
Well, some of us
at
did.
At least not to the extent that we do now.
If you're like me, and I did have a period where I intentionally stepped away from acting. And towards the end of that period, I seriously felt like I was going to lose my mind. So I get it.
Mm-hmm.
But what I can't fathom at this point is not having an artistic outlet.
Yes. And even people who have artistic outlets, like you said, they're feeling burnt out. They feel like everything is very dim. It's been hard. And so my subtitle for this episode was Beauty is Everywhere, Finding Joy in the Ordinary, because a lot of the extraordinary is out of our reach right now.
It is. It really is.
Travel, doing wonderful projects with other people in person, a lot of the things that we would do to sort of shake up our lives and make things interesting and exciting are not possible right now.
Right. It's very interesting that... I have found myself, and I've been pondering this lately, that it's been happening more and more, or it's not happening more and more. I've just noticed it more and more, that you mentioned the extraordinary not being possible. Of course, I take that as, being on stage and, traveling and all that. But one of the things I have found is I am living somewhat vicariously through television and film. not just in the landscapes that you can see and the adventures you can take, but just while you're watching something on television and you start focusing on one actor and then you put yourself in the shoes of that actor as they're doing their thing and wondering what it would be like to be in those scenes and just allowing your mind to make that connection. And I find that there's something quite satisfying about that.
Yes, I could definitely see that. Because we don't have these opportunities, and this podcast, you know, we conceived of it, wouldn't you say, because we wanted to reach out to other creative people who are having a moment, right?
Yeah.
Who are maybe feeling challenged or frustrated or burnt out and aren't really sure what to do. And so we have some ideas. That we're going to present and thoughts about what to do when you are feeling stuck. And I think one of the options is to look for something beautiful. Yeah. And in order for that to happen, you really have to expand your definition of beauty.
Right.
When we think of beauty, you're like, okay, well, she's beautiful. He's beautiful, right? This landscape is beautiful. But... and maybe it would be better to call it aesthetics.
Yeah.
When I look out the window and I see tiny, tiny little buds on my tree that is almost completely, you know, it's a winter tree.
Right.
But spring is coming, right?
Yeah.
And it's going to bloom. Mm-hmm. And we're going, it's life is coming and moving on. And it's beautiful, right?
Right.
I mean, life is beautiful. It's hard to remember. When we are struggling, when we're depressed.
and for me, I think beauty comes in different layers.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that there's beauty in, there's, and I don't want this to come off the wrong way, but there's beauty in, and this is partially because of some of the books I write, because I write, you know, post-apocalyptic novels and all sorts of quirky, strange stories, but there's beauty in devastation. There's beauty in ruin. Yeah. I mean, one of the things that I hearken back to is, back in graduate school, my movement teacher, Rich Rand, who, became my first ever role model, cause he was just a remarkable teacher and a human being and a performer. One day during movement class, he told everybody in the class, go outside and find inspiration. I don't care where you find it, just go outside and find some inspiration. So I went outside and I was just kind of walking around. I was trying to focus not on sight, but on sound. So I was standing near this building and I closed my eyes and I heard this little skittering sound. And I, of course, my mind went various places, what this skittering sound could be.
Hopefully not a cockroach.
Right. And, so I followed the sound and I saw a chipmunk under a bush but the chipmunk was paralyzed from the halfway down, from the waist down.
Oh.
So he only had the use of his upper arms and he was pulling himself along. And of course it broke my heart.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden, as I continued watching him, I was inspired by his tenacity and the beauty in overcoming such handicaps, even in nature, where, you know, we as human beings, we can rationalize this.
Mm-hmm.
We can contemplate it and we can put it into a box and define it. But all an animal can do is think, I can't use my legs.
Right.
They don't know why.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like when my cat looks up at me and meows, he doesn't understand that I've said, I just fed you. All he understands
is, like, you haven't served me yet, human.
Right. So, you know, it was so moving to me that this little creature was overcoming something. And that was a very defining moment in my artistic life, to find positive inspiration in the negative. Because I could have come away with that just being, poor
life
chipmunk.
Is hard, right?
I felt that first. But then once you look beyond the surface, you find that there are layers of beauty and layers of different qualities to be found underneath the horrific.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's just, you know, there is this idea, I think, that through suffering comes change.
Hmm.
And sometimes through suffering comes that beauty that we see. And I'm not talking about physical beauty. I'm talking about just the idea of beauty. Sometimes that's through that suffering that beauty will arise. And the same thing, the pandemic, I was thinking about this the other day, and we've talked about it before. When all is said and done and this pandemic is over, imagine what the first round of auditions are going to be like.
I try not to think about that, Jack, because there are already hundreds and hundreds of talented women that I'm competing.
There are going to be, you're going to walk into an audition and there's going to be.
I won't be on stage for like 5 years. But
there's going to be 100 people just like you at that audition.
Right.
For one role.
You're better than me, I assure you.
But here's the thing, you know, one of the things that, and the good thing is things are starting to look up. Things are starting to look positive now. We just found out today that Broadway's shows are going to start opening up possibly this year.
Gosh, wouldn't that be great?
But at the same time, that doesn't necessarily mean that smaller theaters are going to open up.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And as actors, you still, you know, you still have to fulfill that part of you. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I've told so many actors that is that right now is not the time to become complacent. Right now is not the time to go, well, I can't do a show, so why bother?
Might as well
right now it. Is the time right. for you to be filming yourself so you can critique yourself, so you can send those films off to other people and say, what am I doing right? What am I doing wrong? Mm-hmm. It is a time right now to learn.
Well, and I think it's good that you told that story. I think this is a moment where survival, you know, is important. We have to get through this. This is like the beginning of the end, I'm hoping, right? That things will start to open back up and we'll start to get some relief and be able to hug people again and be with people again and all the things we've been, you know, just wanting so desperately for so long. But in order to survive, we have to acknowledge, you know, how much people are struggling, right? Like so many of my artistic friends feel like they're in a dead end. They feel stuck. They feel stopped up. And I mean, myself as well.
Yeah.
That's one of the reasons we started this podcast, right?
It's, right, right, right.
I was like, Jack, I've got to do something creative, please. but we have this strange moment. And I think about the word renaissance, because renaissance literally means rebirth, right? But you cannot have another birth without death or loss or some kind of permanent change.
Right.
It's not just like you're born and then you're reborn. Like I think about caterpillars, and when they go into the chrysalis, you know, they are literally liquidated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They must go through just unbelievable. I hope they don't have a lot of nerve endings, but whether it's painful or not, they have a complete change in order to turn into a butterfly.
Right.
And we're kind of there, right? We're getting liquidated in this chrysalis. Like, oh, please, can we get out of the other side, right?
Yeah. Well, and we will. That's just it. We will get out to the other side.
Mm-hmm.
And the big question is what will that other side be? Now, we all know that there will be theaters that will have closed permanently because of this. It's an inevitability.
Museums, orchestras.
Orchestras, operas.
There's going to be...
The arts are going to take a major hit because in this country, we don't have quite the support system that other countries do for the arts. And even though, for the most part, the arts are valued in this country.
They're just not paid for,
right. But then that's pretty consistent with the way things are now, that people don't want to pay for content. And I mean content in the general sense of the term.
Right.
But that being said, we are going to survive this. And when we do, it's going to be a glorious thing because it's not just about going into an audition and seeing hundreds of people auditioning for your role. It's going to be packed houses. Because
yeah, I mean, I don't even care. Like at this point, I'm like, just the joy of getting to audition again.
Yeah.
Like, I'd love to be cast. I'd love to do a show, but that's not even really the point. The point is to see the people I love.
Yeah. But imagine, you know, we very often forget that it's not just actors and directors and sound designers and lighting designers that love the theater. Mm-hmm. It's also audience members.
Yeah.
And I would venture to say those first few shows that are going to open are going to be packed. And that's going to be a great thing. And right now, it just dawned on me what it's going to be like when a theater opens their first show after the pandemic, and that opening night audience, what it's going to be like when the curtain comes down. It is going to be thunderous applause and joy and tears.
The joy of it. Yes.
Yeah.
The joy of it.
And if anything, let that be the thing that gets you through this as an actor or a designer or whatever, knowing that there is going to be an inordinate amount of joy to be shared when this is over. Not just because, oh my gosh, we can act again, we can do this thing that we love again. It's going to be that we can share this again.
Right.
And people are going to be desperate for
it. Or dancing.
Yeah.
Or painting or whatever your art form is.
Yeah. Yeah. And people are going to be desperate for it. And, you know, when the floodgate opens, people are going to be, I saw something on Twitter yesterday, a guy that talks a lot about music, and he said, I'm going to go to hundreds of live shows a month or a year.
Pre-pandemic, I was doing 3 or 4 shows just because we both have so many friends in theater.
Yeah.
Just going to your friend shows was like a line item in my budget. Like,
right.
It got expensive, but I mean, I wouldn't begrudge it now for sure.
Right. And you know, even if there isn't something tangible for you as an artist to hold on to right now, there is the thought that when all is said and done, you will be fulfilled in ways you haven't been in a very long time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
You might have to do this. We're actors. We're very good at this. But just close your eyes and imagine that opening night applause even before the show starts. Those audience members are going to be eating it up. And they're going, you know, just close your eyes
being
and picture
in the lobby.
Picture the director walking out to do a curtain speech before a show. And the applause that that director's going to get. You know, it's going to be maddening in a good way.
But
of course, you know, not everybody can close their eyes and imagine that and let that fill them up for the time being. So what do people that can't do that do?
Well, and I think that's what we want to kind of explore and think about. Ever since I was very young, I haven't had a hard time with this, right? I've always found weird things to be beautiful. I guess unconventional things, right? And what you were saying, like beauty and ruin, but also just like beauty in, I mean, sometimes in like trash, right? In the way that trash is arranged, or funny graffiti.
Yeah.
Or like if you open your eyes and look at the world, it's astonishing sometimes,
right?
Like how heartbreakingly beautiful it can be.
Yeah. Well, let's go back to the basics for a second. Remember way back in undergraduate school when you were in your first acting class and the one of the first times, now I can remember very well how I felt in those days, because I came from a small town and didn't do a lot. I did maybe three shows in high school. And then all of a sudden I was a theater major in college. and I remember I had never taken an acting class ever. All I had done was those three shows, but I fell so hard in love with it that I had to do this. And I remember sitting in my first acting class. Now, this was a small undergrad. This was a small school, very small private school. There were three people in my undergraduate class.
Oh my.
That's it. There were three majors. So I can tell you that the education that I got in that department was not very good. Fortunately, I went to graduate school so I could actually get an education. However, my point is this. I remember those first exercises that we did in acting class. Mm-hmm. I remember the teacher saying, get up in the middle of the room, be a tree. And my first thought was, what? Be a tree? Why do I need to be a tree? What does that mean? And it took me a while to understand what it meant, why an acting teacher would say, be a tree. And it, you know, one of the things that we have to remember as actors is that, or writers, because I apply this on a daily basis, is that we find our inspiration in everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
the subway conversations.
Yeah. And like you said,
we're really terrible eavesdroppers when you think about
it. Oh, yeah. And just like you, I can look outside and I can see this tree with this gnarly branch. And all of a sudden I'm like, that's an old man. That's an old man standing with his arm out for help.
Seeing things and then, in other things.
Yeah. Clouds, and then you've all of a sudden you've got a character.
Mm-hmm.
And if you are desperate for something to do right now, then hone that skill.
Mm-hmm.
Open your eyes as wide as you can so you can see how much inspiration there is out there. You can sit in the morning light in a room where the sun is shining through, and you can follow the trajectory of a piece of dust. Because I've done that before.
Mm-hmm.
And while you're following that trajectory of that piece of dust, then all of a sudden you're like, how futile is their life? Is the existence of a piece of dust? And then all of a sudden you get inspired to write or perform something in a particular way. And that's a skill that will serve you from beginning to end of your creative life.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. No matter what your artistic bent is, because refining your ability to observe is absolutely critical, not just to writers, not just to actors, not just to painters or dancers, like to be able to really see things as they are instead of what you think they are, like what your assumptions about them are.
Mm-hmm.
And that's an important skill.
There are sometimes, and I hate to admit this, but and I'm fairly certain that my wife will agree, there are sometimes when I feel like I can read inanimate objects better than I can humans.
I mean, I get it.
that I can look at something and completely understand what it is, what it wants, what it thinks, where it's going, and then I can look at a human and be completely dumbfounded.
Well, humans can be dumbfounding.
Well, yeah, sure. Yeah, they can. Yeah.
I mean, I think one of the things you can do, and this is definitely not the only thing, but if you hang out with a kid And not everybody's into kids, and that's totally okay. But, you know, I have a son, he's almost 2 years old. And when I sit down on the ground with him and dig in the dirt and we pick up cool rocks and mm-hmm. sticks, and the things that he finds fascinating
yeah.
and the things that he finds beautiful are so beautiful to me that I just like, wow, like this is cool. you don't see it, right? Your eyes just glaze over it, obviously. Right. You don't go and look at a stick and be like, oh, that is the coolest stick. But right. to him, it's not a stick. It's a wand, right. or it's a sword, or it's a way into another world, right? Like,
yeah. Well, it's because we're jaded,
right?
And we as we get older, we develop these filters, and everything we see or hear is filtered through our experiences, such that when we see a stick on the ground. It's just a stick.
Right. It's we or really it's know what it is, so yeah. we don't even see it.
Or if we're jaded enough, it's litter, and whoever's living in the house, right? So instead, you know, why is that not a wand?
Mm-hmm.
Why is that not a creature that's just about to come to life?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's where I think, and I strongly believe this. That is where artists need to live.
Mm-hmm.
Artists need to live in that realm of their consciousness where they can look at a piece of garbage on the street mm-hmm. and see beauty in it and see the story behind the garbage and not the garbage.
It's almost like you need to live in the what if.
You do.
What if this? What if that?
You have to be able to, and I know that you have to be able to turn this on and off, which is hard once you've really tapped into it, but you need to be able to look at the world through child's eyes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and now I had an advantage with this. Well, two advantages. Number one, I never grew up.
It can be an advantage in our line of work, for sure.
I had a really, really bad childhood. And because of that, I guess at some point in my adult life, I decided, you know what? I'm going to have my childhood now.
Mm-hmm.
But also, the big advantage was that I was a member of the Stage One Children's Theater Rep Company for 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
So I played a lot of children. And you can't successfully play a child on stage looking at the role through the eyes of adults.
Yeah.
You have to be able to tap into that inner child. Otherwise, the audience is not going to believe it because they're children. They know.
Yeah, there has to be sincerity, which is very out of fashion. There has to be sincerity and there has to be faith. And I don't mean religion.
Right.
I mean faith that the world is full of wonderful things.
Yeah.
Right.
Which is what a child sees.
Exactly.
A child doesn't look at the world and see horror and mm-hmm. and loss and fear. It's just like how we know this that and I almost hesitate to bring this up, but it's apropos, I think, that children aren't racist.
Mm-hmm.
They're just not because they don't see like that. Yeah. They're not jaded. They haven't developed those filters yet. That's a learned behavior. What's that?
Which is why we have to be anti-racist in raising kids, because it's not just enough to assume that they're not going to pick it up, because they will. And there's the internet. They'll pick it up.
They will.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we have to be able to, as adults, we have to be able to regress a bit
mm-hmm.
and look at things in a completely different way. Because if not, because I think, and I know that this might sound a little crazy, but I think that to truly, and I mean profoundly, get in touch with your craft, you have to have the filters removed. You have to be able to look at the world through younger eyes. And I don't mean age.
No, right.
You have to be able to look at things in such a way that they're new. And it's a hard skill to learn, but you can learn it. And right now is the perfect time to learn it.
Yeah, or if you've forgotten it. I think I know a lot of people who have that skill set, but are feeling beaten down or feeling bereft.
Yeah.
You know, and if you can relocate it within yourself, I think that is a very helpful thing. And you have to let yourself be bored. And what you were talking about, the dust mode, I was thinking about that actually. Right. It's like to go into a room or a field or whatever without a device.
Yeah.
Without a television or a phone or a tablet. To go and just let yourself be bored for a couple minutes. We've really lost the art. Because the moment the art you are stillness. Bored, you have the entire world at your fingertips, right? You can read Facebook. You can look at Instagram. You can go on Netflix. And you can go on Hulu. Blah, blah, blah. So when we lose that chance to be bored, to let our brains just kind of have a workout on their own, right? Without any exterior stimuli.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a loss. I think it's something that we have to work actively to rebuild. When I was a kid and it was summer vacation, man, we just had these days where you like, you weren't allowed to watch, you know, that much TV necessarily. So, you know, I would lay on my back and stare at the sun going across the room, you know, but I would imagine things and I was writing stories. And I mean, that's what we have to do. And if you don't cultivate that for our kids now, if they are only enjoying passive entertainment, right, like just sort of become these vessels, these receptacles of entertainment without having to entertain themselves, I think that could be a loss, you know? Yeah.
My childhood, the summers of my childhood were spent after breakfast. Well, there wasn't really even breakfast. There was As soon as we were able to, my mom was like, go outside and don't come in until the end of the day. And we had to, you know, it's not like we had a lot of things. We just had to invent our joy and our fun.
Yeah.
You know, and I think something you were talking about earlier is that, you know, with the whole boredom thing, now might be a good time to take up meditation.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, so you can get in touch with nothing. And just let that become a part of your daily ritual where you can just be okay with this perfect calmness and open your mind up so far that you can be inspired by nothing.
Well, and I think a lot of people envision meditation as like you have to have your brain a complete blank, right?
Right.
You
no, that's
be
not
in
the
this
case.
Like special like a Zen. And I think, and I, you know, being ADHD, I really struggle with meditation because my brain's thinking about this and thinking about this. Right. And so I always thought, oh, I can't do it. But the truth is really, if you just try and calm yourself, right? Yeah. Just find a moment. I think that's close enough to meditation.
Right. You could just, you know, you could sit down in a room, in a dark room or whatever, or light, well, it doesn't matter if there's light or not. Close your eyes and just think of one thing.
Mm-hmm.
Just literally think of one thing. And I'm not talking about just sitting, you know, in the middle of a room and going car, 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 car. Just sit in the middle of a room and think of a car.
Mm-hmm.
What is and then it let your like? Brain, and let your brain go.
Mm-hmm.
And let your brain run variations on that theme, mm-hmm. but let your brain take control.
Right.
And, you know, and it's kind of a variation on meditation, but it would allow you to start honing your instincts. You know, it's one of the best, exercises I ever would give early acting students is I would say, okay, take a pen and paper, and sit down and put the pen down to the piece of paper and start writing and don't stop writing until I tell you to stop.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll be like, what do we write about? Put your pen to your paper and start writing. That's all. Just start writing. Doesn't matter what you write about. It doesn't matter what comes out of the pen. Just write.
Just go.
Let it happen. Let your mind go and let your instinct take over and see where it goes.
Mm-hmm.
And they at first they have a lot of trouble with it because they feel like they have to have these
ideas
and these boundaries and these rules and these and guidance. And it's like, no, that's the point, is to let all of that go and just right stream of consciousness. And eventually, once they get the hang of it, all of a sudden, you know, you'll wind up writing the best monologue you've ever heard.
Right. Well, I think finding that moment of rest, right? That moment of relief, of contemplation, because there is an urge to fill yourself up with stimulation mentally, emotionally, physically, until you're just maxed out, right? But like that can be lonely in its way because the human brain doesn't always work like that. It needs a breath.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you can't, this is something that's happened to me recently is there were 2 weeks ago, I think it was, I was so busy that by the end of the week, I could barely function. My brain was just overexhausted.
Yeah.
And I forgot during the middle of that week to just stop for a moment and let my brain think of nothing, just to give it time to recoup, because sometimes sleep is just not enough.
Oh yeah.
Sometimes you need to let your...
not only are we not getting enough sleep.
Right, exactly. And sometimes you just have to let your brain go, or you have to tell your brain, okay, we're going to just not think about anything for a while. I'm going to give you the rest that you need. And, you know, I have this problem with that. I always, if I'm awake, I feel like I have to be productive.
Right.
And
which is kind of a pernicious thought when you think about it.
It is. And I have recently said, okay, you know what? I'm not going to be productive on weekends, except right now I have to be because I'm rehearsing a show over Zoom. But when I'm not doing that, because it's very brief rehearsal periods, when I'm not doing that, I'm just like, okay, not going to do anything. You know, if the wife says, hey, let's run an errand. Okay, we'll run the errand, but I'm not going to be productive unless I absolutely have to be. I'm not going to force it. I'm not going to expect anything of myself on the weekends. And sometimes as an artist, that's the best thing you can do for yourself, is do not expect yourself to be productive 100% of the time, or you're going to be exhausted.
Oh, yeah. I mean...
and you're going to burn out.
I think that is what people are dealing with. And we have kind of a unique opportunity here, I think, with this pandemic. And of course, many, many people are still having to go and work. My husband amongst them, right? And go and show up every day. So I'm definitely not implying that people... aren't doing some of the same things that they had to do before the pandemic. But if you are at home, if you find yourself having changed circumstances for any reason, it is a sort of a nice time to kind of be like, well, what am I going to do from here on out, right? There's an opportunity to, if you don't like what's happening, you know, if you don't like what you're doing, if you don't like what you're feeling, you know, to think about it. And it's hard, right?
Yeah.
It's heavy lifting sometimes, but like, when I was younger, I read obsessively.
Yeah.
I mean, you could not find me without a book. I got detention one time because I was reading in class and I read I had to read cereal boxes or the back of train tickets or whatever. And then I found in the last few years that I have read very little.
Yeah.
And so lately I've had to force myself. I've set up a reading nook and I'm just sitting down and reading a book. Yeah. And while that doesn't sound all that novel, I think a lot of people who have previously loved reading are maybe not able to read as much as they'd like, not because they don't have time, but because it's easier just to sit in front of the TV.
Yeah, it is
to figure out what to read or to sit there and kind of like go through the action of reading.
Right. Yeah, I agree. You know, I think for the masses, reading has become a lost art.
Right.
Which, you know, to someone like me, that's just like, oh.
Bad news.
No. And I hope that it changes. It will. Everything ebbs and flows. But, you know, there's just so much content to be consumed on television right now that people, and it's just so much easier than, you know, reading's not hard. I mean, let's face it, reading is not hard. But at the same time, television is just easier. And, you know, I watch my fair share of television, but I also read every night and I also write all day. So, but at, you know, the thing is that artists should be reading.
Mm-hmm.
You should. It's not, it should not be an option.
Right. It helps for sure.
You know, whether you're reading plays, whether you're reading books fresh about acting, novels, whether you're working,
whatever.
Just, yeah. Anything, absolutely anything to get your mind working in that, taking those trips and going down that rabbit hole, whatever you can do to inspire your mind to work in a creative fashion, you should be doing it. That, whether that's reading, watching television, writing, recording yourself doing monologues,
listening to music, right,
sitting in a room with absolutely nothing, whatever you have to do, you need to inspire yourself to remain creative.
Mm-hmm.
Finger painting, I don't care. Just do something creative.
Well, and I think TV is interesting, and I love me some TV. I love TV and I love films, and they have in many ways been a big influence on me, but there's something compulsive about it, the way it's structured today. You know, you can, if you don't go find that remote, you can end up watching most of a series before you even realize it. They make it so frictionless to just stay there.
Yeah.
For hours, because that's what they want.
Right.
But then you find, well, what happened to my evening?
Exactly.
And so I'm encouraging people, like, if you're going to watch something, by all means, watch something, but choose to watch it, right?
Exactly.
And make sure, like, check in with yourself. Make sure you're still enjoying it.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not, maybe go do something else.
Right.
I really feel empty at the end of a night if I watch something that I was only kind of half enjoying just for the sake of watching it.
Just don't sit yourself in front of a television just to kill time.
Right. Because that's really,
it's sad.
That is the loss, right? Because we have, like, time is really our only finite resource.
Right. Yeah.
You know, everything else usually we can get more of in our world nowadays, right? But time, that you get what you get, man.
Exactly.
And, like, you better enjoy the way you use it for your leisure time. Obviously, when we have to work, that is, you know, very few people are like, oh, I love my job. And if you have that is fantastic. And I know, like, working from home, a lot of it you love, but you also have those frustrating days where you're like,
Gar. I love what I do, but every once in a while I wake up in the morning going, I can't do it today.
It's just everybody can end up in a grind.
Yeah.
And so it is absolutely incumbent upon us to take a step and say, oh, okay, I got to change this up.
Yeah. Or here's
I'm
how bad it can get.
In a rut.
I have a great analogy as to how bad it can get. So every morning after the wife and I eat our breakfast and, you know, read the news and blah, 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 one of the first things I do is I go, we have three cats, and we have, each cat has their own food and water bowls.
Mm-hmm.
And at each food and water bowl station, there are two food bowls with two different foods and water.
Mm-hmm.
And every morning I go around to each food station and I dump the old food into the can,
mm-hmm.
wash the bowls, dry the bowls, refill the bowls, and refill the water. And I go through that every morning. And lately, even that ritual has started to annoy me,
mm-hmm.
because it's such a routine that I just want to look at the cats and say, can't you
please do this
yourself? And they can't. So you just have to stop and go, okay, I have to find a way to enjoy this again.
I feel the same about my toddler.
Right. And then I take a look at the cats looking at me going, okay, where's our food? And
right.
I can enjoy this again. And speaking of which, we've enjoyed a lot of this topic today.
Oh, we have. I know. As usual, we've run on.
I know. And it is time to go.
It is.
But anyway, thank you for listening, everybody. And I'm gonna let you sign us off this time because okay. This is your topic.
This is my topic. Yes, every week we trade off who's gonna be speaking primarily and what we're interested in. So we always try to bring you new and fresh ideas. And I hope that as you leave us today, that you can go forward and do something to find a little bit of beauty in a moment that you normally wouldn't. And I think you will find that it improves your day immensely. Thank you for listening to The Artistic Heart. That's with Anna Mead and Jack Wallen, and we hope you have a beautiful day.
This has been The Artistic Heart Podcast with Anna Mead and Jack Wallen.
Support for LPM Podcasts comes from the Eye Care Institute and Butchertown Clinical Trials, where they strive for diversity, equity, and inclusion within their staff, patients, and clinical trial participants. To learn more, visit butchertown.clinic.